ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वती व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्. नस्तप्रयेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीर्तमश्लोकैर् भक्तिर्भावति नैष्ठिकैर्. I forgot the translation, but you'll have to take a rain check on that. Next time I'll try to tell you. Madhya Bhadra always gives the translation. It's very nice, actually. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, The Creative Impetus. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Jai. Text number 38 is on the board. No, we did that yesterday. Anyway. And it's prose also. Do we want to change it? Because it's on the board, I don't know. Do you want to change it? Yeah. Anyway, I can change it, I guess. It's prose. I don't know. Anyway, I'm just gonna go on because it's just a little bit too much for me. What I understood is that we did this one yesterday. Learned scholars who are free from mistakes, illusions, and propensities have described the planetary systems and their particular symptoms, measurements, and locations. With great deliberation, they have established the truth that the distance between Sumeru and the mountain known as Loka-Loka is 1/4 of the diameter of the universe, or in other words, 125 million yojanas, 1 billion miles. That was yesterday. So we'll skip the purport. I'll just refresh your memory. Today we do 39, 40, and 41. And we can do more, but let's just stick with that because 41 is a purport. So I'll just read 39. I'll just read the Sanskrit because it's nice. Tat uparishtak cha chatashrif ashashvatma janinakila jagat Kuru na dine vishita ye dvirade pathayae rishabha pushkara chudo vamano parajita iti sakala lokastiti hetavaha. I'll give you a translation. I'll just skip the word for word. I'll read you the translation. On the top of Loka-Loka mountain are the four Gajapatis, the best of elephants, which were established in the four directions by Lord Brahma, the supreme spiritual master of the entire universe. The names of those elephants are Rishab, Pushkara Chuda, Vamana, and Aparajita. They are responsible for maintaining the planetary systems of the universe. So usually we don't, it's like an unwritten rule, you don't speak when there is no purport, but I'll explain that a little bit as far as I can. Here Sukadeva Goswami is speaking to Maharaj Pariksit, and he's explaining about the universe. So the way I remember it, because I kind of studied Sariputta's books, you have the universe, and it's like an egg, and in the bottom is an ocean, and there Garbha Dakasaya Vishnu is laying. Garbha means womb. The universe is like a womb, that's why it's called Garbha. So, and from his navel grows his lotus, and on top of that's Lord Brahma. So, and then just above that is the lower planetary systems, hellish planetary systems. And also sometimes also a little bit higher, subterranean heavenly planets. We won't get too much into that because you might get distracted. And then the middle planetary systems, that's where we are. And that is what we're discussing now, as far as I remember it. And that is called the Bhoomandal. Bhoomandal is like a big disk in the middle. And it's a subtle disk. You can't see it with normal eyes. It's kind of like ghosts. I mean, we're all devotees here, so we know ghosts, they exist, but you can't see them. So it's a little bit like that. It's a subtle body, so you can't see that. So the Bhoomandal is like a disk, and that's what we're discussing. And then above that is like the higher planetary systems, which include the moon and the sun, and then higher, and then all the way up to Brahmaloka. So that is the way I understood it, that we discuss now this disk, Bhoomandal, and on that disk is... And the way it's described, it's a little bit maybe difficult to accept, at least for me, that the sun is going around that Bhoomandal. And there it's like the universe, it's according to this, and I will explain that later, because I just read you that verse. It says here that, because in the middle of, I hope you can still follow me, in the middle of Bhoomandal, Bhu means the earth, and mandal means like disk, right? So Bhoomandal, that is called the earthly planetary system. And on that is also a Himalaya, which is 70,000 miles high, but that is also a subtle Himalaya. There's also here a gross Himalaya, which is 5,000 miles high. That we have to make sure that we don't confuse the two. And, huh? Yeah, 8,000 meters, yeah, 5,000 miles, yeah. The distance between Sumeru and the mountain known as Loka-Loka is 1/4 of the diameter of the universe. So the Sumeru mountain is the mountain in the middle of Bhoomandal, and it's kind of shaped like that. And on top of that is Brahmaloka. That's how I remember it, the city of Lord Brahma. And so 1 billion miles, that's how it's explained there, is Loka-Loka mountain. And it's kind of like a mountain all around Bhoomandal, and that blocks the sun. That's how it's explained. And behind Loka-Loka mountain, there is, because this is only, it says here, 1/4 of the diameter of the universe. So behind Loka-Loka mountain is also more universe. But the way I remember it, that is like dark. That the sun doesn't shine there. So the Loka-Loka mountain is kind of like a whole mountain range around Bhoomandal. So here said, on top of Loka Mountain are the four Gajapatis. So I'll be honest with you, I've kind of forgotten. It sounds really, you know, like a fairy tale almost. The best of elephants, which were established in the four directions by Lord Brahma. So in the universe, there's also four directions. So these elephants are situated there. We don't understand it. We just try to accept it. At least that's what I do when I read these things. But we have to take it literal. Also, these elephants, they are subtle elephants. They're not normal elephants. They're like demigods. The names of those elephants are Risha, Pushkara, Chuda, Vamana, and Aparijit. They're responsible for maintaining the planetary systems of the universe. That's how it's explained. Lord Brahma, he put them there, and he has four heads, and he put these four elephants there. So then we go to text 40. Are there any questions on this? Yeah, but I said 5,000 miles.
Yeah, yeah. So 5 miles instead of 5,000 miles.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. But, okay, that is, yeah, no. That is the whole point. We all know that the Himalayas are 5 miles high, 5,000 meters. Or, 8,000 meters. Anyway, we all know that. The point is that there's a description in Bhagavatam that there is also Himalayas and they're 70,000 miles high. And that's what I was explaining. And the earth, that's how Sariputta explains it, because there's many mountain ranges, and the earth is situated on those Himalayas. That's how he explained it. So it's like a tiny little planet, and it's situated. How exactly? I don't understand it completely, but it's like a subtle region of Himalayas, 70,000 miles high. Anyway, I'll explain that more a little bit later, because I just want to go to the what is it? To the purport, text 41, and then I'll go a little bit deeper into it. Okay, so now we do text 40. The supreme person. Now it gets very interesting, actually. The supreme, and you know, Krishna, he requested me. It should be some bhakti. I think now we're gonna get some bhakti. The supreme personality of Godhead is the master of all transcendental opulences, and the master of the spiritual sky. He is the supreme person, Bhagavan, the supersoul of everyone. The demigods, led by Indra, the king of heaven, are entrusted with seeing to the affairs of the material world, to benefit all living beings in all the varied planets, and to increase the power of those elephants and of the demigods. The Lord manifests himself on top of that mountain, so that is Sumeru mountain, in a spiritual body, uncontaminated by the modes of material nature, surrounded by his personal expansions and assistance, like Vishvakshena. He exhibits all his perfect opulences, such as religion and knowledge, and his mystic powers, such as anima, lagima, and mayima. He is beautifully situated, and he is decorated by the different weapons in his four hands. So I'll be honest with you, I didn't know that. I read it some point in my life, but I totally forgot about this. So I'll just read it again a little bit, just to, you know, try to understand it. So it says here, the supreme personality of Godhead is the master of all transcendental opulences and the master of the spiritual sky. So we all know that. We're devotees. He's the supreme person, Bhagavan, the supersoul of everyone, that we also know. The demigods led by Indra, the king of heaven, are entrusted with seeing to the affairs of the material world. That we actually also know. That is not so much new. So Sukadeva Goswami kind of introduces here what he's going to say. To benefit all living beings in all the varied planets, and to increase the power of those elephants and of the demigods, the Lord manifests himself on top of that mountain in a spiritual body. So, you know, I'll just repeat it. So the Lord is sitting on that mountain. And what I understand, that is also Brahmaloka. So a manifestation of Krishna, the Supreme Person. It's like a Vishnu Tattva. He is sitting on that mountain. And he's also surrounded by his personal expansions, like Vishvakshena. You ever heard of Vishvakshena? I didn't. You heard the name? Okay. Yeah. I'm just looking at the... Yeah, Vishvakshena Adibihi, by his expansion known as Vishvakshena and others. He exhibits all his perfect opulences, such as religion and knowledge, and his mystic powers, such as anima, lagima, and mayima. So these are yogic powers, you know, anima siddhi, lagima siddhi, mayima siddhi. I don't know exactly what they mean. Maybe it's in the word for word. Anyway, it's not so important. He's beautifully situated, and he's decorated by different weapons in his four hands. So we're talking here about Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu is always with four hands, and he's got the conch shell and a disc and lotus like that. Okay, so now we'll do text 41. Akalpam evam vesham kata esha bhagavan atma yoga mayaya virachitta vivide loka yatra gopiya yeti artaha. Translation. The various forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such as Narayan and Vishnu, are beautifully decorated with different weapons. The Lord exhibits those forms to maintain all the varied planets created by his personal potency, Yoga Maya. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 4.6, Lord Krishna says, Sambhavami Atma Mayaya. I appear by my internal potency. The word Atma Maya refers to the Lord's personal potency, Yoga Maya. After creating both the material world and spiritual world through Yoga Maya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally maintains them by expanding himself in different categories as the Vishnumurtis and the demigods. He maintains the material creation from the beginning to end, and he personally maintains the spiritual world. Om Agyanati Marandasya Gananjana Salakya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistang Stapitang Yenavutale, Swayang Rupa Kadama Yang Dadati Swapanantikang. Vandehang Sri Guru Sri Yutaparakamalang, Sri Gurung Vaishnavangsya, Sri Rupang Sagrajatam, Sagana Raganatam Vidang Tang Sajivang, Sadvaitang Savadutam Prichana Saitang Krishna Chaitanya Devang, Sri Radha Krishna Parang, Sagana Lalita, Sri Vishakang Vidangsya. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate, Gopisha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namosute, Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavanishwari, Vishabhanu Sutadevi, Pranamami Hari Priye, Vansha Kalpatrivyascha, Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha, Patitanam Pavanevyo, Vaishnavevyo, Namo Namaha, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadhadar Sivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Sambhavami Atma Maya. So we can try to, Prabhupada, we should learn every day a sloka. If we can't learn a sloka, at least we should try to learn the most important part of the sloka, Bhagavad Gita 4.6. I appear by my internal potency. Atma, my, or the self, maya, my maya. Sambhavani. Bhavami means like becoming. Sambhavami. I appear by my internal potency. Sambhavami, Atma Maya. The word Atma Maya refers to the Lord's personal potency, Yoga Maya. So this is a very, as far as I'm concerned, difficult subject, Yoga Maya. And also a little bit of a misunderstood subject many times. Many times the devotee says that it's all Yoga Maya. And we have to, because, you know, we live in a temple, and then the devotee says, it's all Lila, they say. It's all Yoga Maya. So we have to be careful that we understand what is Mahamaya and what is Yoga Maya. After creating both the material world and spiritual world through Yoga Maya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally maintains them by expanding himself in different categories as the Vishnumurtis and the demigods. He maintains the material creation from beginning to end, and he personally maintains the spiritual world. Yeah, so you can see here how Prabhupada uses the word Yoga Maya. Usually, devotees don't use it so much like that. He says, Prabhupada says here, after creating both material world and spiritual world through Yoga Maya. So that is a little bit difficult for me, at least, to explain that. Because usually, you know, we associate Yoga Maya with the spiritual world and not so much with the material world. But here it said, through Yoga Maya, he creates both the material and spiritual world. So Yoga Maya is the, sometimes also referred to as the internal potency. And of course, the internal potency is sometimes also referred to as Radharani. So you know, this is a little bit difficult to understand. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, achintya. It is inconceivable. Abheda, abheda, tattva. Achintya, abheda, abheda, tattva. So it is one and at the same time different. It's Radharani. And it's actually expansions of Radharani. So Radharani also has her expansions. It's called Shakti Tattva. So Yoga Maya is like an expansion of Radharani. And then you have Mahamaya, which is again an expansion. That is the wife of Lord Shiva, Parvati. So, but that is also, you know, like I said, it's one and different, because Parvati is actually a person you can read about in the Bhagavatam, and she actually kills herself. So, you know, and at the same time, Maya is also an energy of the Lord. So, you know, one and different, and it's achintya. It's inconceivable to understand these things with our, I would say, I don't want to insult you, but like with our ant-like brains, because it's a little bit, you can compare our situation like ants trying to understand Radhadesh. You know, ants can't really understand Radhadesh. What to speak of, you know, Liège or Belgium or, you know, Europe. So we're a little bit like that. We're a little bit like ants trying to understand this, you know, Bhumandal and here, you know, the Sumeru mountain and about Krishna and Maya. It's difficult to understand it, at least for me. So are there any questions on this? Yeah? Could you give the translation of that? Because I forgot.
Well, some of it is bhakti is comprised of the samvit and lodini shakti. Samvit shakti, lodini shakti. Samvit is knowledge, and lodini, of course, is pleasure. And sandini shakti provides the Lord with the dhamma.
Yeah.
So I was a bit surprised, you know, you were describing how Yoga Maya is an expansion of Srimati Radharani. It seems to be a little, you know, like given the tattva that I just described.
Yeah.
It seems to be a little contradictory because we've got Srimati Radharani representing, I'm just, you know, speaking from my ant-like brain. You know, that Srimati Radharani is the personification of the Dini Shakti. So what about, you know, that we're kind of going the other way, you know, with Yoga Maya being an expansion of Srimati Radharani. And then Yoga Maya being the internal energy of the Lord is comprised of these three Shaktis, which Srimati Radharani is the personification of the Dini Shakti. Okay, you get my point? In other words, Yoga Maya being an expansion of Srimati Radharani, but then Srimati Radharani is one shakti of the internal energy, which is
right.
Personified by.
Okay, yeah. I'll be honest with you, this goes a little bit over my head. I understand what you're saying. What I refer to is when Krishna said, I appear by my internal potency. Sambhavami Atma Maya, and generally devotees, they say, like when we say Hare Krishna, we said Hare is the energy of the Lord, right? When we explain Maha Mantra, we say that, no? I mean, Prabhupada also says that. So I refer to it like that. Internal potency refers to Radharani. I took it like that. And then here Prabhupada says the word Atma Maya refers to the Lord's personal potency, Yoga Maya. No, I think your comment is a very good comment. Because I told you in the beginning, this is, first of all, it's a little bit controversial word, this Yoga Maya, because of the past also in ISKCON, how it was used. And I think it's still not very clear for many devotees. And you can also understand it from your comment. You know, that it's not such a 1-2-3 topic. And I think you have make a valid comment. I don't have any further comments on that. I think it's interesting and we should look into it.
I think it's like he said, you know, it's a change of it a bit. It's just like Lord Krishna expands through Balaram, but then he becomes Vasudeva. But through Balaram. So, but it's still Krishna.
Yeah, I was thinking.
Krishna is Balaram.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because that's what we say, that all the paraphernalia is Lord Balaram, like the Mardanga. I remember that Daneshwar was here last time, and he requested us to please not kick the cushions, because he said, this is an expansion of Lord Balaram. So please don't do that, because he said it hurts me, because he's a devotee, you see. So he felt it was offensive to Lord Balaram. It's a fact. These cushions are not ordinary cushions. They're spiritual cushions because they're used in Krishna's service, and therefore they are considered an expansion of Lord Balaram. right? I mean, that's what you're saying. I'm just trying to bring it down to a little bit more practical. Because this is also considered an embassy. This is considered the spiritual world, because this province is like an embassy of the spiritual world. And we know the embassy of India or of America, you go there, it's American territory. The law of America is there. No Belgian police officer can come in there without permission. But it means, like, if they will do that, it means like almost like a war declaration to America. You can't do that. Never. To ask permission of the ambassador. So the point is that this temple is actually Vrindavan. But it's an ambassador. It's an embassy. So it's, you know, like Prabhu says, it's one and different. Because you also have temples in Vrindavan, and, you know, most of us have been in Vrindavan, and it's a little bit different. It's more Shakti. It's more, at least from my experience, more spiritual. But if we discussed it also yesterday with Aneshwar, we have to bring the spiritual world here also. So the more we chant, the more we become serious, we can have the same atmosphere, or theoretically even better than, for instance, a temple. I don't want to say any names, but a temple in Vrindavan. It is theoretically possible. Okay, you have another comment, please. Yeah. Any other comments? Yeah, we've just been right. Yeah, well that is right. Yeah. Yeah, I never really understood that, because they also say that there's a Sankarshan at the bottom of the universe. Like, yeah, but they also call him Sankarshan sometimes. Because Ananta is like a snake, but there's also description, and sometimes they interchange the word, that there's Sankarshan and that he's like wide body. Sometimes he's referred to like Lord Shiva or something. Because generally the way I understood it, because when I read this I was like, whoa, it's much more complicated than I thought. It's, you know, have Garbhadakasai Vishnu, Kshiradakasai Vishnu. In other words, you have one Vishnu that goes in the bottom of the universe, and from him this lotus comes, and then Lord Brahma. And you have Kshiradakasai, goes into all the atoms. And then there is one Vishnu on a milk ocean somewhere in the universe, where Lord Brahma comes and he's praying, please bring Lord Krishna, like in Krishna book. But like you're explaining, you're saying there's Sankarshan, and so it's much more. And now here we hear also about this, or maybe this is Sankarshan. I'm not sure. Maybe this could be. Yeah. Is there anything else? Because I would like to explain maybe two more things. Yeah.
If wherever the Lord will manifest, you know, like, you know, like God as Paramatma in every action, wherever he is, then it will be Yoga Maya. So for us, it will be Mahamaya. Yeah. Wherever he is, it will be Yoga Maya.
Right.
Because Lord Vishnu, he never associates with Mahamaya.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, that is actually the topic that I wanted to discuss a little bit, because that is, it's not so easy to understand what you just said. And it goes very deep, and I don't want to get too much into it because it is a little bit controversial, but I just want to make sure that, like you say, you know, you said that Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu is always associated with Yogamaya. And another thing that I also remember from Krishna book is that when Vasudev carries out Lord Krishna from the prison, it is said that by Yoga Maya, the soldiers, the guards, they were put into sleep. So what I also understood, which is kind of the simple understanding, is that Yoga Maya, she kind of takes care of all the spiritual things for Lord Krishna. You know, like in the spiritual world, she makes sure that all the pastimes go like that.
Sometimes it's also referred to as Lila Shakti.
Right. Very good. Yeah. Lila Shakti, Yoga Maya. So, but sometimes we also, like in the past, we would refer to Yoga Maya as, you know, some behavior of some devotees, and sometimes inappropriate behavior. And then the devotees would say, no, that is Yoga Maya. You know, and it got us into real trouble. He said, later we found out that it wasn't Yoga Maya, it was Mahamaya. You know, it was Big Maya. Anyway. I just want to give some, like, you know, what's his name? Rasa Mandala. He comes in the Bhagavad Gita, he knows very much, much more than me, and he always raises these questions. So that's what I'm trying to do also. I'm just trying to raise some questions. Just think about it. I'm sorry there's no breakfast, so you can't think about it during breakfast, but you can think about these things during the day. Like that. And then there's one last point I want to make, because I sometimes feel that when we read these things in the universe, the world is kind of like, well, you know, I don't understand. And I admit I also don't understand, but I just want to get a few things a little bit clear, because I have studied this. And maybe it doesn't interest you, but, you know, because I'm asked to do this, and I know it a little bit because I've read Sariputta's books, I just want to explain to you. For instance, the next verse, it is also said that we all already read it, but you know, in previous verses, but I'll just read it anyway. Outside Loka Loka Mountain is a tract of land known as Aloka Varsha. So I explained it, because you have Loka. Loka means planet. And I explained, at the other side of Loka Loka Mountain, it's dark, because there's no sunshine. That is called Aloka Varsha. Varsha also means land. So it says Aloka. There is no Loka. There is no planets. There's life also there. Maybe there's planets. But it's called Aloka because it's dark. That's how I understand it. And it extends for the same breadth as the area within the mountain. In other words, 125 million yojanas, 1 billion miles. So this brings us to a diameter of the universe of 4 billion miles. In other words, the whole diameter, at least, yeah, Bhumandal, it's more or less the universe. That's how it's explained. It's 4 billion miles. And just a side point, which, because, you know, I'm a little bit representing also Bhaktivedanta Institute, Amsterdam, actually, because we... You know, I was with Granga Premananda. We asked Ruta Karma, because we were very fired up in those days, can we have a Bhaktivedanta Institute Amsterdam? And he said, yeah, it's all right. So, you know, we made one. I don't think we officially put it in writing, but, you know, at least he allowed us to carry that name. So there is also some discussion about what the Yojana exactly is. Generally, it's given as 8 miles, but Sariputta, he explains it, and it's not so much written in stone. So that is one thing that, because we're building, and now we're going to go again to Bhakti, Krishna Das, you know, because otherwise get, you know, you're actually right. is we're building the Mayapur temple. And I'm sure you know that Nityananda predicted that as soon as that temple is finished, then really the floodgates of bhakti will open, right? You didn't know that? There is a vision, right, of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he saw Nityananda. Maybe you can enlighten us.
He saw the Abutman deer in his vision.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur, right?
Thakur from the veranda of his home.
Yeah.
And he envisioned that Americans, Russians, Africans, Asians, and Indians were all come together, free from the bodily conception of and chant in unison, Jai Satchinanda, Jai Satchinanda.
And where did Nityananda tie into that story? Because I remember that he also was tied into that story here. Nityananda Prabhu, you know, Balaram, he spoke that, he predicted this temple that we are building right now, by also, of course, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas, but also by the mercy of Ambarish Prabhu. He basically...
And Henry Ford.
Yeah, Henry Ford. Anyway, let's not get too distracted, but I just want to focus on the fact that the idea is that once that is finished, then something extraordinary will happen. And so I'll be honest with you, I'm sometimes a little bit worried that are we going to get it right? Because one of the main things called, what is it called, the temple? No, but how did ISKCON call it? How did Prabhupada call it? Because I want to get it right. Yeah, the Temple of Vedic
Planetarium.
The Temple of Vedic, well, not Vedic understanding, right? Temple of Vedic Planetarium, that's what it's called. So it's a Vedic means truth, it means the scriptures, planetarium. So it's a blueprint of the planetarium, well, planetarium is like you have a, you know, you have these things also in big zoos like in America, and they have like pictures of the universe, according to the Western scientists. So we want to have our own Vedic planetarium, according to Bhagavatam. So one thing I just want to impress upon you, because this is it's a little bit of a controversial point, but Sariputta, he came from NASA. So he's a real scientist. You know, he's a real scientist, like in the traditional sense. And so he really studied this. And Prabhupada also, because I'm also now, I can tell you that it's a little bit of a secret, but the Rita maybe knows, but the big minds of our movement, the GBC, they're thinking about this now a little bit, about what is the Bhaktivedanta Institute, you know? And one of the things I came across is that Prabhupada, at one time, he said, I don't know about the moon, because sometimes there's this, I don't want to get into it now, because I'm running out of time, but sometimes he said, he wrote one letter, he said, I don't know about the moon, because there's this whole discussion about the moon being higher than the sun and like that. I can explain it, actually, maybe I should explain it. I will explain it actually, and now I got 5 more minutes. We already did a few questions. I could do that. I don't think it's necessary. Anyway, the point is that Prabhupada said this. I want to just get this across. It's very important. He said, "I'm a layman. I don't know about the moon. Any questions about the moon? Please refer them to my disciples of the Bhaktivedanta Institute, Swarup Damodar Prabhu or Maharaj, I think it was still Prabhu then, Sariputta Prabhu and someone else, I forgot his name. Unfortunately, both of them left their bodies, you know, Sariputta Prabhu and Swarup Damodar Maharaj. Unfortunately for us at least. And but the point is that Prabhupada, he kind of admitted his frailties. He said, I'm a layman, I don't know. Because in the beginning, he said, no, it's like this and it's like that. But then the way I understood it, that he felt that he was getting a little bit cornered by different difficult questions. So he said, I leave it up to them. You put all your questions to them. So we shouldn't underestimate the validity of the Bhaktivedanta Institute. You know, and like I said, Sariputta, he wrote many, many books about this. So it's not such an easy understanding. And I also studied with Granga Premananda, and he also said that not many acharyas, basically none, have really commented much on this particular section of the Bhagavatam. The Acharyas kind of left it. Now there's the Surya Siddhanta, and Dhanavir Maharaj, he translated it. But that's the Surya Siddhanta, it's not really Bhagavatam. So it's a little bit, I don't want to say controversial, but it needs really some clear-headed study. You could say they kind of left it up to us, like this temple. You know, because the whole temple is, like I said, temple of Vedic planetarium. So we somehow, we need to figure this out. It's very, very important. And I think many things will come together. So I'll explain you one thing, and then maybe I'll explain about the moon, and then we'll finish. So one important thing I want you to understand is that according to the Bhagavatam, we're reading it, the universe is 4 billion miles in diameter, or from the middle, 2 billion miles. Now, according to the Western scientists, that doesn't even fit our solar system. Our solar system is bigger than 4 billion miles. So there is another number given by Srila Prabhupada in the purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he quotes his spiritual master that is quoting the Surya Siddhanta. And that number is called 18 quadrillion, which according to Sariputta comes to about 5,000 light years. So that is another number that has been given mainly about the Bhumandal. It's called the circumference of heaven. Circumference of heaven. That's the wording from Surya Siddhanta. And then it's also said, some say that it's half of that. So there is already there a kind of a controversy, it seems. Anyway, the point is that even that 5,000 light years, I mean, to give you an idea, the we all know about the Milky Way. So the Milky Way kind of goes through the universe. And the circumference or the diameter of the Milky Way, according to the Western scientists, is 100,000 light years. So Sariputta, he acknowledged that. So there, you know, we need to kind of figure this out. One solution, I think maybe I also have it from Sariputta, but what I was thinking, I'm not sure if it's a strong argument, but it's something that came to mind, is that most of these things, these numbers that they give, are based on what's called the redshift, which is based on, you know, the light that comes from the different stars. Of course, the scientists, it's called, I think, superstition or pre-superstition. They have like an idea, which is that all the stars are like the suns, like the sun. Right? That's what they say. And the Bhagavatam says something else. The Bhagavatam actually says that there is only one sun and that the stars are like light-giving planets. In other words, according to the Bhagavatam, that light that comes from those planets, it's not so strong as the light that comes from the sun. That's what the Bhagavatam says. But the scientists, they say, no, that light that comes from those planets is stronger than the sun, because our sun is a very small planet and those are bigger planets or bigger suns. So that light is much stronger than the sun. So then, automatically, the distances will get much bigger. So that could be something how we could, you know, scientifically, you know, attack that. The idea, what I understand from, you know, so-called challenging the scientists, is not so much that we convince them, but just that we inform the general public that what we have here is not mythology, and it's actually a very interesting idea, and maybe much better than what the Western scientists say. You know, so like that, we can challenge them. I'm just trying to make, because if you say universe is 4 billion miles, that's not very realistic. And like I try to explain, even Bhaktisiddhanta and Prabhupada quotes him, he says it's actually 18 quadrillion or 5,000 light years. And the way Sariputta explains this is that it's not that the Bhagavatam is wrong, it's that it's a book for yogis. It's a book for bhakti yogis and for yogis. It's a book for demigods. It's a spiritual book. When Sukadeva Goswami told this to Pariksit Maharaj, demigods would visit all the time. You know, Narada Muni was there. He was there in the audience. It's not like Prabhupada says, Bhagavad Gita is not for the lower class. It's for kings. What is that verse? For about the parampara, evam parampara praptam imam racharisi. It's for the racharisis, for the saintly kings. Not even for the kings. It's for the saintly kings, Bhagavad Gita. So we're all supposed to be saintly kings and saintly queens. You know, and Bhagavatam is even higher because it's considered like Bhagavad Gita ABC in this. So we should understand that this Bhagavatam, it's written for like very high audience. And so it, you know, these distances, it might be for another audience. He says it's like higher dimensional, you know. And another way also to maybe understand it is that, like Einstein, he said that E is mc squared. Energy is mass times the speed of light. So in other words, he said that things are relative. And we know from the bottom of them, the higher you go in the universe, how should I put this? The slower time goes. Like, if you go to the North Pole, it's 6 months dark and 6 months light. So that is how it's explained, one day of the demigods. So 1 year in this planet is 1 day of the demigods. So the higher you go, the slower time is. That's why I refer to us as ants, because ants, they live very short compared to humans. And Lord Brahma, we know, he lives even longer. Right? So from that you can see that time is kind of relative, and the higher you go in the universe, the more time change. So time and distance, you know, it's related to each other. So maybe distance also changes. I mean, I'm just giving you some food for thought. I also don't have the answers, but I'm trying to give a scientific presentation how we can challenge the scientists, because they kind of present it kind of absolute, but it's not so absolute as it is, you know. Distance and time, it's relative. So I kind of ran out of time there. No, I have a few more minutes. Okay, now I'll explain about the moon, and then I'll finish. So the moon, Prabhupada says the moon is further away than the sun. So again, this is given by the Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavatam, like I explained, it's for yogis. It's for spiritual people. So what is explained in the Bhagavatam is about the Bhumandal. What I tried to explain in the beginning of the class is this disk inside the universe. So on that disk is the sun. And the sun goes around this Bhumandal and lights up the whole universe. That's how it's explained. I personally have a hard time believing that, but we have to see how to understand it. I'm not quite sure, but the more I read it, the more I start to believe that it might be true, actually. You know, it might actually be true. I mean, it's more like, how is it true, you see? Maybe there's some other explanation that we haven't figured out. But anyway, that's how it's explained, that the sun goes around. And so how it's explained is that you have this disk, and so the sun goes around like that. And the moon is a little bit higher than the sun. It's the sun is 100,000 yojanas above the Bhumandal, and the moon is 200,000 yojanas above the Bhumandal. But the earth, like I said in the beginning, it's situated on these Himalaya mountains, which are 70,000 miles high. So, but the moon is like here, and the earth is here, and the sun is here. So from the Bhumandal, the moon is higher than the sun. Do you follow? But the distance to the Earth, planet, and the moon, it's shorter than the sun. Because the sun is here. And that is also confirmed by Surya Siddhanta.
You said the sun moves around.
Yeah, the sun moves around, but...
At some point,
maybe, not necessarily, because the way I understood it, these mountains are like situated here. And then the sun really goes around the whole thing. So it might come a little bit closer. But according to
the center?
Yeah, it's more or less in the center, yeah. So the scientists say that the sun is about 90 million miles away from the Earth. And this is confirmed by Surya Siddhanta. Surya Siddhanta is a book given by Surya. I'll try to wrap it up now. And it's a very old scripture. And all these distances to Venus, to the moon, to Mars, they're given in that book, and they're quite close. You can read it in Sariputta's book. They're quite close to also what the scientists are saying these distances are. And they are also saying, the Surya Siddhanta is also saying, the sun is 19 million miles away from the planet Earth. So I hope I clarified a little bit more, you know, and you can feel... You can rest assured that this is not a mythology. We just have to try to understand it, how to understand it, you know. And it's higher dimensional. This is a book for yogis. For yogis, it's 1 billion miles, because they can go directly. Prabhupada says they can go on sunlight, they can go through water, You know, they have a different way of travel. So we can't really understand it. So for them it might be 1 billion miles, but if you shoot a rocket, which is not really possible even, then it might be these 5,000 light years that Sariputta is talking about. I don't know. Just you can think about it. But you can rest assured that, you know, this scripture, it's true. We just have to try to understand it, how it's true. And sometimes we take it literal, but at the same time we try to understand how to take it literal. So Prabhupada was right. The moon is further away than the sun, and that's why it says Monday, Tuesday, you know. So the sun is first, Sunday, Monday. That's what Prabhupada explained. So Prabhupada was right. It was just, anyway, I don't want to get into it now, but that's why he ultimately gave it to the Bhaktivedanta Institute. But ultimately, because Prabhupada just upheld Shastra, and the Shastra says the moon is further away than the earth. But with the earth sometimes also means Bhumandal. That is also referred to as the earth. So that's the explanation. So I'll just leave it there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Klinkt nog steeds slecht, hè?